soon find out.
You really want to head back out there?
Can you imagine what we'll find?
Alien despots hell-bent on killing us. Deadly space viruses, anomalies that could wipe us out in an instant.
Okay, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. Bonus episode, we're reviewing Star Trek Beyond today. This is Brian.
This is Johnny.
And what's happening?
Not much.
All right, so we went and saw Star Trek Beyond on Friday night, which is kind of weird for us to go on to a Friday night movie. We typically try and go for the mornings. I was surprised by the crowd that we had, because the theater was packed for sure.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of older people. Like, you know, there weren't as many teenagers as I thought would be, it being a 4:40 showing on a Friday.
Yeah, I think teenagers would be the later shows if they were coming.
Well, I was just thinking because summer break and everything. Right, yeah. But it was interesting to see more, like, quote-unquote adults in there.
Yeah.
But that being said, what was your initial thought on the movie?
I really liked it.
Yeah.
Really, really, really liked it. I'm pretty sure this was the best of the three so far.
This was the best of the three, and it is now in my top three.
Okay.
And it has moved probably a controversial choice out of my top three.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Which one did it move out?
Khan.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean,
fair enough.
You know, I mean, my favorite is Voyage Home.
Okay.
Just flat out. And we'll put this on the site at some point this year.
yeah.
But, and then I love First Contact second.
Okay.
And then this one.
Okay.
I will say this felt very Star Trek from the beginning. I don't want to spoil too much just because there's a lot of great, like, visual gags, if you will, or just good use of camera to tell some things with the story. But the beginning aliens were great.
Yeah.
And it was a huge surprise kind of what happened there. And then,
well, that's the one thing about both this and the last one, Into Darkness. Both the openings have been, like, very strong openings.
Yeah.
It's just this one kept stride with the opening.
I agree.
Well, this one kept stride because the opening, you know, it had a captain's log. Yep. Like a Star Trek should have at the beginning, not go to what Into Darkness did with John Harrison and all that stuff. If you're going to open a Star Trek movie, you should open it with a little bit of action and then Captain's Log. And
Captain's Log.
Let us know what's going on.
I don't know what day it is.
It's like, Captain's Log.
So Chris Pine,
grown into this role for sure,
has, like, you know, and it's not like, oh, I've forgotten William Shatner.
Yeah.
Because this is a completely different Kirk.
Right, yeah.
But the way he plays this character is so interesting. And, like, you know, he was good in the last one. I mean,
The
Into Darkness, the problem wasn't necessarily the acting other than Benedict Cumberbatch. He kind of overdid it.
Yeah. We talked about that.
Already, we did. So. But the story was the problem with the last one.
Yeah.
And trying to shoehorn Khan in was the problem with the last one. Justin Lin turned out to be a remarkable breath of fresh air for this franchise.
Yeah.
Now, you watched the Fast and Furious movies, right?
I've seen them all, yeah.
Yeah, okay. When he came into that franchise, it was at a time of transition for that franchise as well. And
did he direct multiple ones, or did he just direct the one?
I'm pretty sure he did a couple, but...
Hold on,
it's really easy. I have it up right now.
Oh, okay.
But no, so with this one, though, it was definitely a breath of fresh air. Yeah, he did Tokyo Drift, Fast and Furious, Fast 5, and Fast and Furious 6.
Okay.
So, and when he did that, I mean, like I said, it was, like, Tokyo Drift was a completely different movie.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite of the Fast and Furious, where I know it doesn't get kind of the love it deserves. But Fast 5... is, like, that's the game changer of that franchise, where it went from being, you know, the concealed, like, story and, you know, or contained story about family to just a bunch of kick-ass drivers who happen to, you know, do Ocean's 11 style heists at every opportunity.
Well, that's literally, I mean, what the Fast and Furious movies turned into was Ocean 11s with cars.
Yeah. But no, like I said, it was fun.
I mean, you had enough of the subtleness of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the writing has something to do with that. But with him directing it, it was like enough of the subtleness, but acknowledging that it's Star Trek.
Right.
And then when the action happens, it's like you got the right guy for the action scenes.
Yeah.
I mean, especially with, and it's in the previews, with Kirk riding the bike.
Yep.
It's like, there's so much more to that scene. I don't think that would have been a good scene. But with him, it's like there's so much going on in that scene.
And there's so much more to that scene than what you see in the preview that makes that you understand why that's a thing. And then you get this really cool action set piece. The other cool thing is Simon Pegg and Doug Young killed it with this script.
Oh, yeah, they did.
I was reading before we went to see it, and people were like, oh, I can't believe they let Simon Pegg get his hands on the Star Trek script. And it's like...
like, he's a fanboy, isn't he?
Well, you know, and beyond being a fanboy, like, he's been involved with the writing process for some pretty great movies that are... Did he
co-write Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah, and like they did Spaced together.
Okay.
Like he was involved.
I've never seen that, but I've heard that it's really good.
Spaced is great. I think it's on Netflix. If it's not, it's on Hulu.
Okay.
That's a must watch.
Okay.
I probably watched that series all the way through like 4 times.
Wow.
It's hilarious.
And I knew that he had co-wrote the Shaun of the Dead, and you know, of course, has had input on Hot Fuzz and, you know, those three, that trilogy of movies.
The Coronado trilogy.
Yeah, and plus Paul. I mean, Paul is a fun movie.
Paul was great. We had fun with Paul. Like, when we went to see Paul, we were the only two people in the theater who I think really got that movie. Oh, yeah. Because when they walked into the bar and they were playing the Cantina music, we were the only people who laughed at that.
Yep.
And there were a couple times in this one where you and I were laughing and other people necessarily weren't, so... I don't know, maybe it's our just sense of humor aligns with Simon Pegg's.
Well, or... and he, they both acknowledged the legacy and history of Star Trek.
Yeah.
To the point that, you know, they referenced the Zindi. And they referenced the Romulan War. And that, and I'm like, that's cool because, like, we hadn't got any of that in the last two movies, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, besides Klingons and Romulans.
Well, Klingons and Romulans and Vulcans, and that's it. It's always
Orions. I mean, we've seen Orions, like, you know.
All right, real quick, Shaun of the Dead, Simon Pegg, Spaced, Shaun of the Dead,
okay.
Let's see here, and then, Hot Fuzz, Run Fat Boy Run. I don't know if you remember that one. Okay. That movie was great with him and Tandy Newton. Paul, World's End, and then now Star Trek Beyond. So, you know, he
co-wrote all of.
Yeah, he co-wrote. Okay. He's got written by credit in all of them. Cool. So. You know, it's just one of these things where he's an accomplished like screenwriter that I think probably is really underrated as a screenwriter.
Yeah.
And it showed that you had a writing team, and not to take anything away from Orsi and what's the other guy's name?
I forget.
Anyway, not taking anything away from those two, but.
Those two are very strong writers.
They're strong writers. And they were great on things like Lost and in coming up with their own things. Like Fringe, I think, is another thing that they wrote.
Well, even like I always talk about Hawaii Five-0.
Yeah.
They are the producers on Hawaii. So they've written episodes of the show. And it's like, it's a strong show. They are strong writers. It's just you fall into a trap when you're trying to do what the studio wants. And, you know, I think with this one, the studio was like, do whatever you want. Do whatever you want.
We don't care at this point. Yeah. But I mean, a fourth one's already in the works. So,
which I'm curious to see what kind of alternate universe they're doing with that, since they said that Chris Hemsworth is going to be in it.
Yeah. So, unless George Kirk is going to return.
Holodecks start showing up.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, that could be an interesting thing. Or it's a Q.
Oh, that would be cool because, well, and that's the thing is like we talked about, the continuity in the comic books is the continuity in the movies.
Right.
So Q has shown up. They have encountered Q. And it's like, that'd be cool if John DeLancey showed up in the Star Trek movie and it wasn't the Next Generation.
I think it would be cool if the Green Lantern Corps showed up.
Oh, well, yeah. See? So. See, that's one where I don't know if that counts as continuity.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I'm sure if I sent a message to IDW, they would answer that. But
I'd like to see like Larfelice You know, yeah. I don't have to see the whole Green Lantern Corps, but to see Larfleeze or you know, even Bleeze or Dexstar, you know, just kind of show up in the background or something, that would be really, really cool. I don't think Warners would ever let that happen.
Probably not.
But no, okay. So in this movie, we get, they're 3 years into their 5-year mission.
Yeah.
And Kirk is very much lost his way. It kind of, one day seems to run into the next. The way they handled that visually when he was cleaning up after his encounter. And he opens the closet and it's all the freshly pressed uniforms, just all the same. And, you know, the coupling that was going on the Enterprise.
Right.
And,
you know,
it told the story really, or showed the story really early on.
Captain's Log pretty much told you, this is what we're feeling. This is pretty much what everybody's feeling at this point, and this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. And we're heading to Starbase Yorktown for some R&R.
Yeah. Yeah. And much needed, like provisioning or whatever.
And when they rolled up on Yorktown, I leaned over to her and I said, look, I said, it's DS9 on steroids. Oh, God, yeah.
So, like, DS9 looks downright antiquated, but they took over that base from another...
The Cardassians.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So...
well, it's like you in Star Trek, the original Star Trek, star bases were usually on planets. In the movies, there was the one we seen that orbited Earth.
Right.
And in Next Generation, they used that same thing as star bases in other orbits. And to see something new where not only was it new, but they were acknowledging science as gravity was set in different ways in different places. Well,
and they also acknowledged why Yorktown wasn't on a planet.
Right.
It was to show neutrality for new Federation planets. So, you know, I thought it was, you know, I thought all of that was handled really well. You know, destroying the Enterprise.
Which, that's not a spoiler.
It's not a spoiler. Like,
right.
I don't know
we're
if
that... We're
not
spoiling, right?
Not if we can help it.
Okay.
I don't think that had to happen.
Like, it didn't happen, but it motivated the story toward the end of the movie.
It did. It was kind of gratuitous the way it happened. You know, and I get it, and I understand it, and I understand Krall, who was the you know, Idris Elba's character. Like, I understand his motivation.
Yeah.
And, like, the way he destroyed it.
Like, instead of destroying the Enterprise... that when they take the nacelles off, they should have just left it at that.
Yeah.
And then took everybody down to the planet as...
Yeah, like, they should have, like, beamed them off or whatever. Yeah, however they were doing it.
Yeah.
But, like,
well, there's a lot of... And this isn't spoiling it. There's a lot of webs being woven in this story that you think one thing's happening, but it's not the thing you think it's happening.
Right, right.
And it's like, you know, I don't want to spoil that, but it's like, you know, there's more to it than what you see.
Right.
And it's really cool to...
I mean, it's definitely a layered story, which is great. And like you said, there's the lines that weave throughout in these threads. But yeah, it's just like when the nacelles come off.
Yeah.
Like, to me, okay, the ship's crippled. Like, you know, it would have been great if when they were trying to reroute warp through the impulse engine.
Yeah.
Like, that should have then crippled the ship further.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been a great way to handle it without seeing, you know, another saucer section head into the atmosphere.
Yeah, I was going to say Deanna Troi wasn't driving that one.
Well, no, it was...
But it looked like the same kind of setup, the way they came down. And I was like, man, it's like...
Much better done.
It's like, much better CG. They're tearing the hell out of this.
Yeah. And...
what they do to the saucer section later in the movie is... probably cooler than it's crashing.
Yes.
I mean,
I agree. And so again, when I say they shouldn't have destroyed it,
like,
we would not have gotten that scene.
Right.
So, like, I'm willing to make that trade. It's just seeing another Enterprise explode was kind of a little much for me.
It was fun. I think that the writers obviously did a better job with using all the characters.
Well,
this
again,
wasn't just
you had a
Kirk Spock centric movie,
and so with JJ and that crew, right?
And I'm
going to reference The Force Awakens, which is a movie we both love.
Yeah,
They are great at writing two or three main characters.
Yeah,
right. So in that one, you know, really the focus is on Kylo, and Rey and Finn.
Yep.
And then Poe to some extent, but he's gone for a large chunk of the movie.
Poe's had more to do in his comic book than he had to do in The Force Awakens.
Yes, which has been great, by the way. But no, he has, so like, you know, they're great at that.
Right.
All
right.
When you have a 7-person ensemble cast the way this one does.
Yeah.
I mean, Pegg has written for those kind of like movies and shows and things like that. So he understands that kind of storytelling.
Yeah, and I read.
And it really shined.
That he said he wanted to do it where he mixed it up.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Kirk and Chekhov. And it was Scotty by himself and then eventually with Jayla.
Yep.
You know.
And you had Cho and Uhura. And you had, which was probably the best part of the movie. Oh, yeah. Sulu. Sorry. John Cho. And then you have what was probably one of the best parts of the movie. You had Spock and Bones.
Which totally like made that those two made the movie really for me, because it was like their scenes were some of the best scenes in the whole movie.
It was they were funny.
Yeah.
It was heartfelt.
Yeah.
The whole thing with the little amulet.
Yeah.
And he's like, you gave her a,
yeah,
you know, and he's like the, like, Zachary Quinto, when he looked at him and he did that little eyebrow raise, like, what? I mean, you know, sure.
Yeah.
Who doesn't do that?
Just acknowledge, like, the acknowledgement of passing of Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
In that scene, especially, was like more heartfelt than anywhere else in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean it was heartfelt throughout the movie. We all know that, you know.
We learned early on that Ambassador Spock had died.
Yeah.
And, you know, Spock, the Kelvin verse Spock, didn't share that with anyone.
Right.
Not even Uhura, really.
Right.
So when he first shares it with Dr. McCoy, which, you know, I mean, looking back at the 50 years of Star Trek and knowing the contentious relationship they had, you know, you green-blooded bastard, you know, it made that really special.
Right.
At least in my mind.
Yeah. It was just one of those things where, you know, Zachary had pretty much came really close with Leonard, like, after the first movie.
Yeah.
They became actual friends, and you could tell that he was grieving during that filming of that stuff. And it was like, when they're talking about it, it's just like, you know there was probably more to that than what you've seen.
I'm sure there was, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, it was nice. And, you know, even with the passing of Anton Yelchin.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if this is his last IMDb credit, I don't know if he filmed anything else that's coming out.
One more thing.
Maybe. I mean, regardless, this is the type of performance that like his family can look back on and be like, you know what? He by all accounts, he was a great person.
Yeah.
He was a kind man. He went out giving a really awesome performance because Chekhov was great in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, the bounce off between him and Chris Pine, I think made each of them better in their scenes. And then,
well, and they made the characters seem like, you know, between the first movie and the second movie is like about 2 years.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like he had matured much, but it's like now we're 5 years out from the first movie. Mm-hmm. And it's like Chekhov was a more matured character. Seemed more matured.
Yeah, I mean,
and
he's 22
action.
Years old at this point. And
And it's like, you know, it's a shame, but it is what it is. And we can't help that he passed away. But I mean, you know, I agree. This will be like a good performance from him.
Yeah.
To remember him by and all that. And there's a scene in there toward the end where it's like, they didn't plan it out, but man, it's like, geez. there's a gathering at the end, and Kirk says something, and it's like they show Chekhov, and you're really like, wow,
yeah,
it's like they didn't plan that at
all.
It
was very reminiscent of the planned scene for Paul Walker,
right,
at the end of Fast and Furious
7. Yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, it was great, and then, you know, just again, Zoe Saldana, like, we got to see
more
out of
action,
like, you know, she got to do some kung fu fighting.
Yeah,
you know, like the whole time it was going in my head, Uhura was kung fu fighting.
Oh my lord. I'm just like, there was the movie she did a few years ago that was like
Colombiana.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, we know she's an actor. Yeah. She can do action.
Well, in The Losers, you know.
Yeah.
As well,
and I'm like, well, it's about time they used her for that.
So and she was that great go-between Krull and in humanity. and then John Cho.
Oh yeah.
I mean, so George Takei's Sulu was you know pretty badass.
Yeah.
This is like Jason Statham level badass. Like his just calm.
Right. Yeah. The,
like it's just like okay. Never once did he panic. Right. He was in like command of the refugees.
Yeah. Well, he and in the you know, command he does, structure, he's like probably the third down.
Yeah.
On the
well, it probably goes well. It's Kirk, Spock,
and then Sulu. Right.
And but like the thing was is like he had the most to lose out of anyone in this story with
yeah.
with the you know the Krull's goals to take down
Yorktown. Right.
Like he had the most to lose.
Yeah, because his
and at
his
no
husband
point,
and kid were on
right.
on the base.
And at no point did he ever put himself first.
No.
Ever. You know? Nope. And at no point did he ever look at anyone and go like, oh my God, my family's on Yorktown.
Yeah.
You know, he and it was just like, but you saw, like, you know, you saw the duck on the pond thing where
yeah.
behind his eyes, like, you know, everything was moving a million miles a minute, but he was still utterly in control.
Yeah. Well, so, and like he tells Krull, he goes, you don't know who we are.
Right.
It's oh, like, yeah. you know,
yeah, I mean, you heard
like,
it in the open of the show.
Yeah. It's like that's pretty much like, I'm going to kick your yeah. ass.
Come here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It
literally, it felt like the vibe you get when he says that to him in that scene. You're like, okay, it's like he will take you down. It's like Sulu don't need anybody else to help him.
No,
he'll
no,
take
no.
you down.
And then, so then, speaking of kind of this badass nature and the action, is we go to Carl Urban,
yeah,
who had both,
yeah,
like this was by far his best outing in this franchise.
Oh yeah,
he got to fly a little bit, he got to fight, he got to complain up a storm.
Yeah,
you know? when they used the old. Like Enterprise series, you know,
yeah.
level of transporter.
Yeah.
It was just like, it was great. And he
Why
was always,
did you beam us one at a time? It's like the line is just great.
You would have loved that. So you planned this, didn't you?
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in there so, where it's like, wow.
But, damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not
So what about Idris? I mean, did you like Idris's performance?
Here's what I liked about Idris's performance. Is all I saw was Krull.
Yeah.
And I knew it was Idris behind the mask.
Right.
I knew it was Idris from The Voice.
Yeah.
But
even that, he did a really good yeah. job of, you know, taking it down a level where it's like, you're like, okay.
I mean, his voice is pretty iconic, but, you know.
Yeah.
You're right. He did take it down. All I saw was Krull. Like, I was so happy with him in this role. And now that's not saying I've ever been dishappy
right.
with him. Like, I think the only time I ever haven't really cared for him is when he did that guest stint on The Office.
Okay.
And that's just because he was picking on my boy Jim.
Yeah.
So. But, no, he was great. The twist with him was great.
Yeah.
You know, Sophia.
Boutella?
Boutella? Boutella?
Boutella.
Boutella?
Yeah.
As Jayla.
I'm pretty sure it's Boutella. The way it's spelled.
Yeah.
I'm pronouncing the way it's spelled.
So, if Sophia Boutella sounds familiar, she played the woman with the blades for her legs in Kingsman.
Yeah.
And
Samuel Jackson's right hand woman.
Yep. And she was awesome in this.
Yeah, she was.
You know, and I didn't recognize
well,
that was her until you told me when we got out. Because
my
I hadn't...
hope now is because obviously they said they're not going to replace Anton, is that they bring her in.
Well, and so the skill set that she has would be a interesting,
yeah,
you know,
Gazelle way. Was her name in
yeah
Kingsman,
right?
Gazelle.
Is that blood? You know I can't see blood. Anyway, no, she was awesome. Again, like, this is an alien race we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Her makeup.
Yeah, we got a lot of alien races we had never seen before.
Her makeup was one of the best parts of her character. I mean, just the way it just worked on her
was
awesome.
What was the other one? The ensign. The alien ensign that
Yeah, with the spider arms for
Sil.
The head. Yeah, Sil.
Yeah, that was a new Sil. Alien race, and I'm like, that was cool.
Yeah, that was really, really cool. And that was Melissa Roxburgh.
Yeah.
Who is from the Diary of a Wimpy Kid movies.
And we have to say, make a reference.
Well, she was Betty Seaver on Legends of Tomorrow.
Shoura Agladesho was added into this, right?
Like, yeah, I think she was hers were done after the fact.
She played Commodore Paris.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that reference to
Tom Paris?
Tom Paris?
I'm like, okay. So
I was like, that was kind of cool. I liked her. I liked what she did for the movie.
It was great for her. The scenes with her and Pine.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, she only had scenes with Pine.
Yeah.
Were great.
Yeah.
And I think she's such a fat.
Well, she kind of felt like the, you know, obviously because Captain Pike had been killed.
Right.
She felt like she was filling that void.
Yeah. That,
because he needed somebody to help
him. But it was kind of the motherly love version
that
of it. Too. Not the I dare you to be great speech that Pike gave him.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, you're too petulant. You're going to be benched for a
while. Well, it was that whole thing where she, because she was an admiral or a commodore. Sorry, not an admiral. Commodore.
You know why she wasn't? You know how we could tell she wasn't an admiral?
Because she didn't go insane and try to kill
everybody. She wasn't crooked. Yeah, she was. You know, she cared about Starfleet.
Well, and the thing was, is like that was it. That was what it was. Is like that caring about her captains,
mm-hmm.
because the commodores are usually like right. in charge of the captains. Her caring enough that when she's talking to Kirk, you felt like she actually cared about
what she was concerned about what he was going through. Because she even said, you know, this happens a lot.
Right. Like, yeah.
You know, this happened
to me. I'm sure she had been a captain of a starship at some time.
And
too.
I think it did happen to her.
Yeah.
Right? And she chose to be stationary.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he,
but even the fact that, like, she's stationary, but she's out on the frontier. And it's like, you know, you're still having the adventure, but you're having a different adventure. But for him, it's like, you know, anybody who knows James Kirk and Starfleet at this point knows that his spirit is to be out there finding the adventure.
Right.
And it's like, you know, that I think this movie does acknowledge that, you know, when they're going to the world where Krall is, it's like, you know, he has that sense of adventure that we're going to find something new here. And, you know, by the end of the movie, it's like you really feel that from him. It's like, you know, I think she was a good thing to put into the movie because she was part of the reshoots and all that. And it was like, okay, you know, those reshoots really did help the movie. And then I got to mention something else. One of your favorites. Greg Grunberg shows up in this movie. And I'm like, I started cracking up as soon as I seen him. But I'm like, that's pretty cool. Because he played Commander Finnegan, who had been one of Kirk's foils at Starfleet Academy.
Yep.
So I wish there would have been a scene where they would have acknowledged that.
Yeah.
but it was just funny because you literally tensed up when you see him. And I was like, old Greg.
I tensed up and I went, Grunberg.
Good old Greg showing up where you don't expect him.
Oh, man. Look, JJ's not on these movies. He doesn't have to be in these
movies. He's the producer.
I know. I get it. I understand giving your friends jobs when they can't act.
Oh, wow. Anyway. Wow. Jeez.
Anywho.
That's kind of cold.
Yeah, well, it happens. But
There's people in this movie that I'm going to have to go back and see it again because there's Shea Whigham is in the movie. I don't remember seeing him, but he plays just an alien leader.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, he plays the Tanaxi leader. So he's the voice of that creature.
Like Lydia Wilson is in this as Kalara. She was Domhnall Gleeson's little sister in About Time.
Kit Kat,
remember her? The one
the
one who he drove crazy by going back in time so
much. Yeah.
So she was in this, which is cool to see. But so who played Sulu's husband?
Wasn't that Doug Jung?
Was that Doug Jung? Oh, okay. Yeah. So because he looked a lot like what's his name from Fast and Furious? The Asian guy. I can't remember his name now.
Wait a minute, there's an Asian guy in Fast and Furious?
Yeah, the from Tokyo Drift.
Han.
Thank you, Han. So
Han Solo.
Yeah. Because that's who I thought it was at first, but...
Yeah.
No. Okay. Oh, yeah, that's him. All right, cool. But no, it was... Oh, yeah, there it is. It's Ben. So, So the I think the other big thing is, you know, we talked about the Enterprise being destroyed, right?
Yeah.
The other cool thing, and you know this from the preview because you see the NX class ship. And if you haven't watched Enterprise, first off, why not?
Yeah.
You got to kind of chew through the first season to get to the good stuff, but trust me, it gets real good. The NX class ships were the first, you know, starships that Starfleet sent right. out. Finding the Franklin, and I purposely said it that way because
Franklin,
yeah, because that was Justin Lin's dad, and that was why pretty awesome. Was called the Franklin,
yeah.
So finding that, them getting that ship up and running. Jayla's cloaking technology that she essentially invented. Was hiding it. But to see that ship in action was, I don't know. For me, it was a big treat. Because
you're like, it was like, couldn't we have gotten an Enterprise movie?
Well, you know what, though? I'm kind of glad that we didn't. But, because we got plenty of, like, to the point I almost thought, like, Trip Tucker should show up in this movie at some point.
Yeah, as the Romulan.
As something. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the NX ship is the only, like, model Star Trek thing I have in my office anymore.
Yeah.
Because I love it so much. I love that style of ship. But to see it and then to see it be just badass. And, the whole plating and, you know.
They acknowledge everything that was talked about on Enterprise, and it's a little different than Enterprise.
Well, it's just a little more powerful because it's an older model of a ship, you know? But yeah, it was so cool. And then the way they used the music with the BC Boys and
Sabotage.
Yeah, Sabotage. But then what was the song she was listening to when she first
Fight the Power.
Her? Yeah, Public Enemy, Fight the Power.
Yeah.
You know, using she the modern using, you know, the modern music and then they're
the
like
the classical music.
Is that classical music? And it's like, "Yes." I'm like,
"Yeah, that's classical music."
That's what should stand the test of time, the Beastie Boys. Not that Mozart garbage. No, I'm kidding. That stuff is great. I'm just being sarcastic. But
well, it was nice that they acknowledged that too. Yeah. Like when that starts, Kirk just gets this little smirk on his face where it's like, "Oh yeah, I wrecked a car when I was listening to this.
I drove my stepdad's car off a cliff with this." So
yeah.
But yeah, all right. So all in, this was just. I mean, I'm gonna give this 4 out of 5 stars.
Okay.
Not that, you know, I just had a lot of fun with it.
I
was going to
give it straight 5 stars.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not giving it 5 stars just because what it is.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a 5-star movie. It's definitely a 4-star movie. Yeah. And you know, if I were to say 5 stars, from me, that would be kind of disingenuous.
Uh-huh. Of Star Trek movies, I would give this one of the 5-star Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is up there with First Contact, Wrath of Khan. Voyage Home.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. For me, this is number 3.
Yeah.
Like
you said. I'd have to look at my list and see where it falls in the place, but so it's in at least
Khan
the top 5.
Khan got bumped down to number 4.
Yeah.
And, you know, Star Trek 2009 got dropped down to number 5.
Yeah. This I'd say this is definitely in my top 5.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I think a 4-star review for this movie is great. I want to see more in this line of the Kelvinverse.
Yeah.
More
Simon Pegg and...
Yeah, it was. I don't know, man.
Let the guy do what he's doing. I mean, because obviously it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Lin is welcome back.
Yeah, Justin Lin was my big concern in this, right? Because he hadn't done sci-fi,
right?
You know. But that being said, if you go back and kind of look at like what he turned the Fast and Furious franchise into, I mean, he kind of made them into superheroes.
It's the whole thing that Justin acknowledged. The whole legacy of Fast and the Furious because,
right?
I mean, you had the first movie, which had a cast, you had the second movie, which had a different cast,
right?
And you had the third movie, which had a different cast. He literally meshed all that together.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, with you know, the writers that worked on that,
mm-hmm.
he made an ensemble family,
right?
Group,
right,
and it's
right.
like, you know. If he could do it with that, obviously he could do it with Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And with the strong writing and all that, it was like, you know.
I mean, the
definitely would.
There were a couple effects that weren't great.
Yeah.
That kind of like, because most of the effects in this were great, there were a couple that just kind of
stood
out.
Sometimes it's the movie screen at the theater we
so
go to.
I would have liked to have seen it on like the RPX screen.
Yeah.
Just, and I know that's more money, but
right.
just because that is such a better projector and that screen is right. in such better condition. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this.
To go see this in 3D. Yeah. I mean, you don't have a thing for 3D at all. I hate 3D. I may be tempted to go see this in 3D on the IMAX screen.
But I mean, I'm definitely going to go see it
just
again.
To see the battle scene at the end in 3D. I think would be really awesome.
That might be cool. Yeah. But no, that battle scene at the end, just the way they're flying that ship. And
the music and the everything about it. Everything is great. You know, it's definitely one of the better battle sequences in a sci-fi movie I've seen.
Yeah, in a while. Yeah.
You know, like I said, the writing, the directing, the acting, everything was very solid for me.
It just felt very much like a Star Trek.
Yeah.
Just Star Trek bit
of
content.
And for me, reading the comic books and knowing what's going on in this universe, it's like, you know, there's a lot more that they acknowledged in it than, you know, the common moviegoer will know. But for somebody who is in it a little bit deeper, it's like, yeah, it's cool because you acknowledge some of the things.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading the comics and just kind of like, I think for a couple months in a row, I kind of forgot about it and then just fell behind.
Where, you know, when Into Darkness had come out and they said, well, this is all going to follow in continuity. And it's like, the book is ending, and the book is changing to Star Trek Beyond. Yeah. And it's like, okay, you know.
Which I think will be a good jumping on point.
Yeah.
Like, if you like this line, if you like these characters and the way they're done, like, you know, IDW is putting out some pretty fantastic stories. Like, the Green Lantern crossover was great.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Most of their Star Trek stuff's been pretty solid. I mean, you know.
The little bit of the Manifest Destiny I read, I really liked.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So, Q in the next movie.
That would be a cool way to do George Kirk.
Yeah.
So, either he'll like appear as George.
Well, I think it would even be cool if they acknowledge another alternate universe.
Yeah.
You know, because
They did with this one too. Oh, that was the other thing that I wanted to touch on before we close out.
Yeah.
Is when Kelvin Spock is going through Spock Prime's personal effects, and there's the picture of the original cast.
Yeah.
That was a great nod back to those people. And, you know, I know this movie caught some flack for Sulu being gay,
right?
Especially from George Takei. It's like, maybe you should have waited to watch the movie before you kind of got all keyboard cowboy.
Right.
Because I'm sorry, but if they hadn't announced that, or if he hadn't like made such a big deal out of it, I don't think I would have even noticed.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that noticeable.
And you know, it's like, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if like the way they wrote it, it was like such not a big deal.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, Spock and Uhura are together, and it's an alien race and a human, and you know, it's like,
he's half human.
Well, still the whole acknowledgement of, you know, if that can happen, anything can happen in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that's what it's open for.
Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, Riker was banging anything that moved, so.
I mean, so does Kirk. So.
No, Kirk was just banging women. Riker was banging anything that moved.
Yeah. You look back at, like, the captains, right?
Yeah.
Like, Kirk, he's a bit of a hound dog.
Yeah.
You know, Riker, while he wasn't a captain, he was definitely the hound dog of that group.
Sure,
You know, Picard was not immune to getting his groove on with the ladies.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And then you had Archer, who was like some sort of like pilgrim Puritan guy, you know?
Archer was focused on the mission.
Yeah.
Because it was his father's mission, and he just was carrying on that legacy.
Yeah, he had a legacy.
And I mean, Janeway, it was, you know, I don't think, even though they had like a strong female writing group on that show, I don't think they knew what to do with her romantically.
Well, they couldn't make her like slutty or.
Well, no,
know,
it was just the thing that they always.
It's unfortunately
like,
a double standard.
Trying to put her with Chakotay. And it was like, no, leave that alone.
Yeah.
Leave that alone, because that's what people would have expected.
Put her with the Vulcan guy.
No, he was married. Well, he was married.
You know, but yeah, well, you know, when you're in the Delta Quadrant.
Well, those two, I mean, in the history of it, those two were like really good friends beforehand. So, you know, but yeah, it would be cool if they start in these movies acknowledging like the future.
Mm-hmm.
because, I mean, Tuvok obviously had been serving on Excelsior at some point.
Yeah.
So it would be cool if they showed a Tuvok in this universe.
Yeah, little kid Tuvok or something.
Or just a Starfleet officer named Tuvok. Yeah. And, you know, because Vulcans are long-lived.
Yeah.
And that, you know, just a little bit of history. Like, the Paris thing was cool. And that, if, you know, if we see a Picard at some point, would be kind of cool.
You know, a Janeway, a Riker.
Yeah.
You know, just, we get a Beta Zed show up.
Or, yeah. You know, some acknowledgement like of what's coming in the future.
Yeah.
And that, because I do hope that, you know, nothing with the movies, but maybe eventually we see the Kelvin timeline's future and see what the next generation would be like. And that obviously would be IDW, but, you know.
I mean, but it will be different.
Yeah, everything's different.
I mean, they're a more aggressive Starfleet.
Yeah.
Their technology is farther advanced because of what happened with the Romulans and you know, Nero.
Yeah.
So
they
kind of had to become more militaristic.
Right.
I did like the look back, though, with the Makos and all of that.
Yeah, acknowledging that was really cool. All that history was... really cool. The change of the uniforms. I really like these new uniforms.
The new uniforms were way better.
They look like the original Star Trek uniforms. Well,
not only that, they just look more professionally made.
More comfortable.
Well, yeah. I mean, because those other ones were like, it was like that sheer material. Mm-hmm. It just kind of looked cheap.
Looked like they were going jogging.
Yeah. Like it was like an Under Armour shirt or something. Yeah. But these looked like a uniform and it was classic and like, you know, it was a little high up on the neck, but not too high up on the neck. You know, it was the costuming was great. The effects were great. The makeup was great.
Yeah. So what do we got? 2 years until the next one, maybe?
I guess. Yeah. Two, maybe three. Anyway. All right. With that being said, this has been our bonus episode review of Star Trek Beyond. Johnny, where can people find us online?
They can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Johnny Podorf. I'm also on Facebook. You are in the whole Twitter.
It's you just know. Look up Brian Tudor.
Brian Tudor's on the internets, and he's not a magician.
Okay, and where can they find the podcast online?
They can find the podcast at Twitter and Instagram. And do you have us on Pinterest? No. Okay. Well, then we're not on Pinterest.
We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
And then you can find us at infamouspodcast.com, on iTunes.
Yeah. On Stitcher.
Google Play.
Pretty much anywhere.
Is it Google Play?
Yeah, Google Play. So, yeah.
I'm old. I'm still learning this stuff.
You have a Windows phone, so, I mean, it's okay.
You know, it's fine. So, anyway. I can listen to that's the thing. If you have a Windows, you can listen to it off of the Infamous Podcast on your Windows phone.
There you go.
I have done it many times.
All right. Well, everybody have a great day or night or evening or weekend or morning whenever you're listening to this.
Let us know what you think of the movie.
Definitely. Contact at infamouspodcast.com. Let us know. And
check out our previous special stuff. Yeah. Check out the other reviews of the Star Trek movies we've done.
Yeah. There is a review of
Undiscovered Country is coming.
So next.
Yes, that'll be next.
All right, guys. Well, we will talk to you soon.
Thanks for joining us.
Later.